need a laugh as a helping people. But Dunbar's talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's my mate, Water Toaster. Oh, it's my mate, Water Toaster. Yeah, yeah, it's my mate, Water Toaster.
Hello, welcome back. Here we are again for another episode of Toasted. This is the episode where there is no superstar guest, there's just my wife. It's a nice intro, isn't it?
It's a good one, isn't it?
Also, what's quite nice about having the, obviously my wife, but also Sunday Times top 10 bestselling author and host, co-host of Wild Swimming Wangers podcasts.
Yes.
There's a plug. You're welcome.
Thank you. One of the UK's top swimming podcasts.
Beth Morrey is here.
I'm an extreme sports presenter.
Yes. Yes. Does it count as an extreme sport?
Only when the temperature in the lake drops below 5.
So, okay. So for a few swims a year, you're an extreme sporter.
Who'd have thought?
I need to, when I talk about my wife, I think that's what I need to start saying now.
Yeah.
What does your other half do? She's an extreme sportswoman.
And then when they meet me.
And it sounds faintly rude. Extreme sports. Same. We all know. We're all thinking the same thought.
No, I'm not.
Oh,
what?
No. Okay, fine. Nothing. Also, the good thing about having you here is that there's no need for the patter at the beginning of the episode where I say, how are you? Because I know how you are because I see you every bloody
and
day.
And also, you're not that bothered either.
And also, I mean, I'm sure the feeling's mutual as well.
Yeah.
Although you didn't seem to care much about my frozen shoulder that I was talking about yesterday, which I've now upgraded to frozen shoulder, by the way.
Oh, okay. I made a sympathetic noise, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
I thought that was quite good.
Yes. Yes, that was all you did.
I suggested you have a massage.
You always suggest I have a massage. Whatever I've got wrong with me, you suggest a massage.
Everyone should have a massage.
You know why I can't have a massage.
Because you can't bear them.
I don't like to be touched. Anyway, so on this episode, what we do is talk about last week's episode, Abby Clark. Brilliant episode. If you haven't listened, probably listen to that first. We've had emails. I've got three. Three, count them. Three emails to do. So we'll get onto those in a minute. And they are about actually Nikki's episode, the Nikki Byrne episode. So we'll get onto those very shortly. And one's about Abby Clark, sorry. So before we start that, though, I think let's just dive straight in, shall we, and talk about 50 Shades of Grey. Let's just really get into that. By the way, there are links in the episode description if you want to go and buy yourself a copy of 50 Shades of Grey. Affiliate links where the My Mate Bought a Toaster conglomerate plc.com gets something like 5% commission if you buy them on Amazon. I don't particularly recommend you do buy them on Amazon, but a link will be there should you require it. 50 Shades of Grey. Beth, have you read it? Can we do some sort of rude book club now?
I have lots of skin in this game.
So to speak.
Now, Abby's first mistake was she bought it in hard copy form, where true aficionados know that the whole point of 50 Shades of Grey was it came up around the same time as Kindles became a thing, which meant that you could read it on the tube without getting embarrassed.
It's no coincidence.
And that is exactly what I did. I read the first book, and then I read the second book, and then I read the third book.
Okay, now, I know why you did that, because you told me in an incredibly blunt way why you read all three books the other day.
I am ashamed of this.
And I don't want you to now begin some sort of, I was exploring.
I think it's a really interesting literary work.
I don't want any of this. I want you to tell us, in the same blunt way that you did the other day, telling me, why did you read all three?
Okay, in this blunt way, this is the truth. Although I wasn't turned on by it.
This isn't blunt now, this isn't blunt enough. You've already begun a caveat.
Okay.
Well, just do it the same way you said
at the beginning of the first book, there is the hint that they're going to do anal. And I was like, ooh, well, that'll be interesting. And it's sort of dangled as a carrot. Throughout.
Did you have to use that as the
and
analogy,
so
as the
they don't in the first book, so I had to read the second book and I had to keep reading to find out if they do anal.
That's it. No, that's the end of it. That's what you said to me the other day. I only kept reading to see if they do it up the bum.
Yes, but now the implication is now the question, did they do anal? And the answer is I can't remember.
Right.
I don't think they did. I think I was disappointed.
Right. Is that worth writing on a review? Of the book.
Disappointed. No, because I'm not convinced that they didn't. Right. But books two and three are much more not about the sex and about other silly things like she gets kidnapped or something. I think that's with the 50 Shades Freed and all that stuff.
can I just say, if someone now feels we're in a situation now where someone's going to be like, well, someone's going
to
know.
Yeah, and they're going to want to tell us. I'm interested still.
I look forward to an email that someone's going to write. By the way, tom@toasterpod.com. tom@toasterpod.com. Someone's going to feel the need to write an email saying, yes, they do it out of the bum. Chapter
and I
three,
can't remember.
Four, whatever. Not book four. There is no book four. Or is there a book four?
No, I don't think so.
Also, can I ask for your expertise as regarding the writing element of this, not regarding the casual S&M that it brought about. But what do you think is the secret to writing this stuff? Because in the Charlie Higson episode, which is coming up quite soon, Charlie Higson starts talking about writing sex and writing porn and how you can make quite good money from it. But he says it's hard because it's just shagging is quite dull, really.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, no shade to 50 Shades. But I mean, when I was a lot younger, I read a fair bit of spicy Mills and Boone, because you can get sort of different gradations of Mills and Boone. Mills and Boone is basically billionaire shag's half sister sort of thing.
Lovely.
But there used to be a lot of kind of virginal activity in Mills and Boone. And then there's a sideline where it's just quite full on.
So is it like in the old days, Marlboro Lights, Marlboro Reds?
Sort of, so yeah. You can get like hardcore Mills and Boone. And I read a few of them. Mm. And I really don't see what the difference between 50 Shades and a spicy Mills and Boone was.
Mm.
It was slightly baffling.
Branding, I would say.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Somebody
the
just
hint
decided.
Of S&M gets people a little bit hot.
Well, no, but there's
collar.
Plenty of Mills and Boone that's got the same stuff. Mm. So I really, really don't know. It must have just been the sort of hype and marketing that actually worked.
It really, the word of mouthness of Mills and of, yeah. 50 Shades.
Well, the origin
huge.
Story of it was also quite interesting because it started as fanfic.
Yes.
And it was fanfic for Twilight. And I suppose Twilight had a huge buzz. And so there were people who discovered it online because of that. I think I'm right in saying that. And so maybe there was a sort of crossover of fans going from Twilight, which had a huge following,
yes.
to this.
Twilight had a huge following amongst women, didn't it? Massive.
I loved the Twilight
yes,
series.
I remember going on our honeymoon and you had something like four Twilight books in your bag, which was alarming.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not ashamed. I don't do guilty pleasure.
No, quite right too, quite right too. Fine, okay, so 50 Shades of Grey. The prevailing narrative about that book now that I hear again and again, certainly on the show, is, well, it's just a bit disappointing, really. Yeah, bit of a letdown.
It was fine.
All right, okay.
It was fine.
That's quite positive. That's quite positive.
Yeah, I mean, I read all three books. I was a bit disappointed by the end.
Because there was no bonfire.
Yeah.
This is very revealing for all sorts of reasons. Fine, okay. Yeah. Well, there's a link to the book if you want to check it out. I mean, nothing like getting on a craze many, many years after it's happened.
I would suggest you get it on a Kindle and then you won't get judged.
Yeah. Okay, elsewhere, Abby talked about, oh no, this was very revealing for me, buying a cake in the shape of her teacher.
Yeah.
Did you ever get any of your teachers a gift?
Not that I remember, and I certainly didn't make a cake in the shape of one.
A friend of ours teaches or taught at a very posh school. We all know who I'm talking about here. You know who I'm talking about here.
Yes.
And he was given iPads by his kids at Christmas.
Oh, wow. I'd prefer that as a teacher than
a cake
of me.
Because there's something about I'm, you know that Partridge episode when he meets his stalker? Not that Abby is, of course, a stalker of her teacher at all. I wouldn't dare suggest that. But that Partridge episode when he meets the guy who's got Alan's tattoo is something like, I made your face in a cake.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. I believe her when she says that it was about the fact that she liked making cakes rather than the fact that she liked her teacher.
You're
but
right.
But that's not how the vibes will have come across when she pushed that cake on a trolley into a room and the teacher was there going, oh, my God.
what have I done here? I was looking up various cake products that you can buy on Amazon. And I looked up cake in the shape of a human. And I found this. Can you see this? There's a link to this again in the episode.
Yeah.
Isn't that gross? Do you want to describe what we're looking at here?
It's a mold. Well, it's a cake mold that's both a brain.
There's a brain there.
And a heart, but not like a heart as in a nice heart that you draw.
Not a nice
an
heart
actual bit. Anatomical heart.
Anatomically correct. The pink realistic heart brain silicon molds. I mean, maybe this.
Why would you want that?
Well, maybe it's not for cakes. Maybe it's for educational reasons. But there are some amazing molds. If you browse through the molds here, you can see there's flowers, there's animals, all sorts of different types of cake you can use. None of them so far are sociology teachers like Abby did. But this reminds me of the mold that you got for our son, because he's a fossil lover, isn't he?
Oh, yes. I bought an ammonite mold.
Yes, yes. An ammonite mold is very sweet. But I would suggest, that a mold in an anatomically perfect version of a heart and a brain.
I accidentally once made a brain cake for you.
What's a brain cake?
Well, I was trying to make a cake in the shape of a golf ball. So I made a round cake and yes. then I covered it with ice, white icing.
Yes.
And then I made sort of dimple indentations in it
yes.
to replicate a golf ball. But I mean, I'm not very good. Abby is clearly much better at this than I was, because yes. I made it and it just came out looking like a really sad brain.
Right.
It didn't look anything like a golf ball.
I've forgotten that. Because now your cake making is focused on our children. We've got a birthday coming up, in fact, for our teenager. What's your cake? Because you do insist on doing this every year, even though, especially with the teenager now, he's not that interested.
No, he was absolutely sickened by the suggestion.
Yes, he was embarrassed because you were suggesting getting him a cake in front of his friends.
Yeah, he doesn't want that at all. And he I'm nearly sad about
he was so upset, he nearly spoke.
But the point is, I'm not very good at it. Whereas I think, I haven't seen the evidence, but I think Abby sounds like she is really good.
So cake experiences you've had in the past, you made a golf ball that turned into a brain for me. Also, let's not forget the fox that you made.
It wasn't a fox, it was a dog.
Sorry, a dog that turned into a...
What?
What was the thing that looked like a turd? Oh, no, it was a volcano.
That was a volcano. You made a poo cake.
You made a volcano that literally looked like an enormous poo.
With like an anal fissure at the top, because I tried to do lava, but it just looked like blood. That was one of the worst.
We brought it out in front of all the parents.
Yeah, they all
this is like
support.
For a four-year-old's birthday party and everyone. And the noise of, happy birthday, as we're bringing it out, here we go, the candles on it. And the noise of everyone going, ooh. It was like they'd seen someone get injured in a football match. It was genuine pain.
Yeah, I constantly disappoint myself when I make cakes.
Yeah, but you don't. It elates me. Because they're not failures, they're massive successes. And we'd love to hear from you. If you've got a good cake failure, then get in touch with the show, tom@toasterpod.com. Tell us about your cake failures, even send us a photo if you like. Do you want to hear some emails, by the way, before we go to our
yes.
little ad break? So let's talk about, first of all, this is from Martin in Leeds. Hello, Martin. Hi, Tom. I was listening to the Nicky Byrne episode, this is a couple of weeks ago now, whilst walking the dog, and then he spat my coffee out when he said Louis Walsh considered him his sixth favourite member of Westlife in a band of five. It actually reminded me of my first proper office job. Every Friday, the boss would bring in cakes for the team, but somehow there'd never be enough for everyone. After about 6 months, I realised there was always one person who missed out, and without fail, it was me. This is heartbreaking.
Oh, Martin. You should play some sad music under this.
Yeah, I could do that. Don't put editing expectations on me. This is a quick turnaround podcast. I don't think it was deliberate. Are you sure, Martin? That sounds like someone who's been through the therapy of it afterwards. But it became such a running joke that people would hide bits of donut in drawers for me just in case. To this day, whenever somebody says they're feeling overlooked, my wife still asks if I've checked the stationery cupboard for emergency cake. Please tell Nikki that being the least favourite person in a group can still work out all right in the end.
Sad, though.
Martin, indeed.
I once worked in an office and I was always the person who remembered who checked on people's birthdays and arranged yes. the little moment.
That, knowing you as I do, makes sense.
And it got to my birthday and obviously nobody did anything at all, but it was worse. I was going out with friends later and so I was dressed up and I got mocked for being dressed up. You know, what's up with you? Why are you? Whose birthday is it today? And I had to say, it's mine.
I remember this.
And they were all so horrified.
Oh, that's so delicious. In an office of people making TV shows who couldn't care less about you.
Nope.
Wow, that is absolutely
character
brutal.
Building.
And that was the day you began your journey to becoming a writer. Also, your spot in the office was deadly because you were right by the fat shelf, weren't you? You had the
bit... That's. I think you find that that's not a very woke term.
Oh, come on. The fat shelf is because it was covered in cakes and you can get fat if you eat lots of cakes.
People used to bring in stuff and dump it there. And then I would eat it. I once took off the fat shelf a load of... sesame honey covered almonds, because I really like them, that somebody had brought back from somewhere like Greece or Turkey or somewhere.
Amazing.
And I spilt them all on the floor, and I was so desperate to eat them that I spent half an hour crawling around on the floor picking them up so that I could shove them in my gob.
Oh, God, that is absolutely delicious. Fine, okay, so let us know if you sit next to the fat shelf. Can we say fat shelf?
No, we should rename it.
All right, we're going to have a quick break for some products, but shortly we will be talking about how to poo on a date. Also, two more emails, including an excellent email about 50 Shades of Grey, which I should have read. After we talked about 50 Shades of Grey.
You could edit it in.
No, this is a low lift podcast, this. Thank you very much indeed. All right, stand by for some products and we'll be back in a moment with a lovely email from somebody called Janet. Don't go anywhere. Hello, welcome back to... I nearly said the name of my other podcast there.
Too many podcasts.
Hello, welcome back to Toasted. This is the My Mate Bought a Toaster spin-off where myself and Beth Murray, aka my wife, aka Sunday Times Top Ten, etc., 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 talk about last week's episode. Now, Abby Clark was on the show. She was talking about 50 Shades of Grey. Janet's been on. Hi, Tom. I was listening to the Abby Clark episode, and her story about buying 50 Shades of Grey reminded me of one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. Excellent. When the books first came out, I was so mortified about being seen reading them that I hid all three copies inside the dust jackets of some very worthy-looking hardbacks. One was a history of the Industrial Revolution.
Oh, my God.
Another was a biography of Winston Churchill. And the third was something about gardening. I thought I was being incredibly clever. Fast forward about 10 years, and my daughter came home from university during lockdown. She had run out of things to read and decided to raid our bookshelves.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's good stuff. A few days later, she wandered into the kitchen holding Winston Churchill and said, "Mum, this gets very weird around chapter 3. Never in the history of bum fun. I froze. She then produced the other two books and announced she'd found my entire secret collection. Apparently, she had spent half an hour crying with laughter, imagining me sneaking off to read Churchill every night. To make matters worse, she'd taken photos and sent them to her brother, who immediately changed my contact name in the family WhatsApp group to Mrs. Grey. It's been 4 years and I still... Oh, it's longer than 4 years now. It's been 4 years and I still haven't recovered. Love the podcast, Janet in Cheltenham. Thank you very much. Janet and Charlotte.
Janet, amazing work. Buy it on Kindle.
Ah, get it on Kindle and all that is avoided. The dust jacket, you see, it's never a good enough way of hiding these things. Okay, elsewhere on the Abby Clark episode, something which I wanted to talk about was the rubber ducks at the New Year's Eve party.
Yeah, the hidden rubber ducks at the party.
The hidden rubber ducks. It reminded me of Motherland, which obviously we love, when Diane Morgan's character throws a quid into a room full of toddlers and shuts the door and they have to find the quid. And just watching that going, that is genius. Forget party entertainers. Forget any of that stuff. I think that game, throw a pound in a room, could still work with adults. It could definitely work with our teenager.
The duck thing, though, because I was thinking, I wasn't sure I agreed with her about, you know, the sort of enforced fun of a New Year's Eve.
Yes.
And I was thinking, oh, God, would I get in there and think, oh, God, just let me drink and sit in a corner. But then when she said, we have hidden 76 tiny ducks around there or whatever
it was.
I was like, oh, no, I'm in. I want to find the ducks.
You go off in teams. It's sort of like a New Year's Eve party meets the Crystal Maze. Like, it's total genius.
Yeah, it was good. But I didn't... What was it called? Assassins or Code Word or something?
I can't remember. Yeah.
I didn't understand the rules. And I really, really tried.
Yes, I tried as well. So here's an idea. If you know that game that she was talking about, the Code Word game last week, drop me an email with a concise description of that game.
I think it's impossible to explain. You just have to play it.
One of those.
But I really couldn't quite get there.
Tom@toasterpod.com. Drop us an email, please. Yes, the Code Word game I struggled with. But of course, we all know that the best game that we've ever played at any party is Mafia. Yeah. Such a good game that, of course, Claudia Winkleman stole it and turned it into Traitors. That's a joke. She obviously didn't steal it. But the game of... It's essentially Murder in the Dark, but we were playing... How many years ago were we playing a version of Traitors?
20 years ago?
That's depressing. That's a long time, isn't it? If you've never played what we call Mafia, then it is just... If you've got a party, I would say the minimum number you require for this game is 6.
I can't remember. It's probably better to have more than 6 because you need to not know who's done it.
But, yeah.
But
yeah.
The point is, you don't really need anything. You don't need to buy anything.
You need
to
bits
play
of paper
game.
And pens.
But I would recommend, if you you wanted to buy a game on Amazon, the one I would recommend is the one that we bought for Christmas, which was called Ransom Notes.
Oh, yeah. Explain Ransom Notes and I can put a link to it. Thank you.
Well, again, it's really hard to... you always make games seem complicated by explaining them when they're not at all.
Yes, you're absolutely right. In the same way that sometimes you should just go, this TV show is about some guys going to space. I'm not telling you anything else because
yeah,
I will murder it
it's
instantly.
It's so easy to play. It's basically like Scrabble, but instead of letters, you get words. So you've got a number of words and then you get a card that asks you to describe something and you have to use your words, whatever you've got,
yes,
to describe the thing. I'm not making it sound particularly good, but it's really, really good fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's got Cards Against Humanity vibes. It's a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, and kids can play it.
But kids can play this, whereas kids clearly, obviously cannot play Cards Against Humanity. Can I just, this is very important, describe the best game that you can play at any sort of New Year's or sort of dinner party situation? Because I do love imposing games on these things because I saw someone, in fact, one of our listeners was chatting to Abby on Abby's Instagram and talking about the best parties involved playing board games. If you are that sort of person, it's just a fact. You just know it to be true. So that moment when Abby went, I'm sorry, but your story about whatever it was is not as interesting as playing. I couldn't agree.
Joint activity.
I love it because then you can chat around it. But this person, I've forgotten who it was commenting on Abby's Insta saying, I went to King's Cross and we played, I think it was Monopoly, whilst having a chat and we were all concentrating on a game, but we're having a nice time as well.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so the best way to do things. And the best game for that, which we introduced to some of our friends, was Ex Libris.
Yeah, that's a great game. And again, you can buy the game, actually, but you
don't need to,
books.
Yeah, it's absolutely free. It's absolutely free. The absolute best game of all, Ex Libris. Shall I very quickly explain how Ex Libris
works?
Well,
that is quite easy to explain, I think.
So basically, you do it in someone's house and you go and grab five or six random books. So you do need someone who's got books in their house. So don't use, for example, my teenage son's bedroom.
No.
Such a
sad face.
Crime. It's like, it's the worst. Go and get five books, and then one of you has to be leader each round. One of you take it in turns to be sort of in charge. And that person will then decide whether you are going to write out the first or final chapter of the book in your hands.
Line.
Sorry, not whole chapter.
That would be a really long-winded game.
I would love that version of Ex Libris. So, for example, maybe you've got a copy of Anthony Horowitz's new book, A Deadly Episode. God, I love Anthony Horowitz. And I'm saying that because his book is right in front of me. And you say, right, I have the first line of the new Anthony Horowitz book in front of me. You will now take it in turns to write out what you think will be the first line.
To
right?
make it up.
To make it up. Thank you. Thank you. I'm liking you correcting me as I go here. And then they all get handed to me, right? And then I read them all out. And then you will have to vote and decide... which one is Anthony Horowitz? It was the third week of production, and so far, everything had gone as well as could be expected in the shooting of a film that was already thousands of pounds over budget, riven by creative differences and fast running out of time.
That's a good opening line. Anthony, but could you do better?
Anthony Horowitz is such a genius. I'm going to put a link to this book in the episode because it's so good. He's my absolute favourite. Yes, and then you have to decide... whose is the real one and who wrote all the other ones. It's a really good game. And you do the first line of the book and you can also do the final line of the book.
And if you're thinking, oh, I'm not a writer, I couldn't do this, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I will be forever annoyed because our friend Jack wrote as a last line for a random book, I don't know what it was, it doesn't matter. His last line was, pottery never lies. Yes. Which is utter bullshit. The worst last line ever. And everyone voted for it because it was so random. Everyone thought it had to be real.
And then we played it once with the writer Joe Craig, who wrote some brilliant thrillers for kids called Jimmy Coates. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And you wrote the last line.
We were of one of his books.
Yes. This is what I'm saying. So you wrote the line as part of the book. You wrote, and
The Thames flowed again.
And the Thames flowed again. And Joe Craig was like, that's such a great line. I'm stealing it.
But I'd read all his books, so I knew how he wrote.
Oh, so hang on. So actually, I've got this wrong. So that was the line from his book?
No, it wasn't. Right. I just knew how to write in a bit in it. I could do one sentence
in
his style.
And then he went and used it, and he actually used the line.
No, he did not use the line. No.
Can we say
said it was really good.
Can we say for the purposes of this story that he used the line?
No.
Okay. And the Thames flowed again. One day a book will end with that line. That's Ex Libris. It's absolutely brilliant. All right. Running a little bit out of time. Do you want to go? Should we go to our final email? From Rachel. Yes. Go on, what do you want to say?
So I did want to just mention something about pronunciation that came up in the episode. It was your pronunciation.
Yes.
And I'm going to say it like you say it, because I do say it like that. Gie.
Right.
And
I thought I was
Abby,
losing my mind.
Correctly, as it turned out, corrected you.
Gilet.
Gilet.
You know, I edited down that bit. There's loads more of me going, Gilet.
Yeah.
And she literally said, are you having a nervous breakdown?
Yeah, it freaked me out because I was like, no, hang on, he's right. No, he isn't. Oh, God. And this morning, because we do too many podcasts, I was recording another podcast.
Wild Swimming Wangers. Listen to it now.
And I said the word Gie, as we say it.
Yeah.
And my co-host, Marianne, went, what the hell are you doing? And she asked ChatGPT, which confirmed that the pronunciation is Gilet.
Okay.
But I still can't believe it.
But I wonder if we just pronounce it Gilet because we're in a closed off tribe here. Do you know what I mean? We're uncontactable. We've just been in
but
this Gilet
French,
world.
But it's French, isn't it? Wouldn't the French say Gilet?
Yeah, but yes.
So we are, basically.
Yes, we're being pretentious. Maybe that's what it is. Because I'm pretty French.
But I'm now in a quandary about it because I think we're wrong and I also think we're right.
Okay, simple thing to do here. Could you, by a show of emails, tom@toasterpod.com, do you go Gilet or Gilet?
Maybe you could do a poll on Instagram.
I could do a poll on Spotify.
Or as Abby would call it, a paw.
I could do a paw. I could do a poi on Spotify. I'm going to do a poi.
Poi.
I'm going to do a poi. Right. How do you pronounce it? I look forward to people voting on that. Email then. This is from Rachel in Bristol. Hi, Tom. After listening to the Eurovision chat with Nikki and then hearing you all carry on the discussion on Toasted, I felt compelled to get in touch. My family has our own ridiculous Eurovision tradition. Every year, my mum insists she's worked out the voting pattern and spends the entire evening predicting who will give points to whom. She delivers her theories with the confidence of a senior MI5 analyst. The problem is, she is almost always, without fail, absolutely 100% wrong. Last year, she became convinced that one country was definitely giving the UK 12 points because their singer looked friendly.
Good luck with that.
They gave us absolutely nothing. Despite a decade of evidence to the contrary, she still arrives every Eurovision armed with colour-coded notes and what she calls continental intelligence. This is superb. I thought Nikki would appreciate knowing that there are people out there taking Eurovision even more seriously than he did. Love the podcast. Rachel in Bristol. Isn't that nice? Very nice. Thank you very much.
Rachel's mum, well done.
Rachel's mum's a hero. But also what I like about that is the collective insanity of Eurovision, because it does this year, obviously, for we all know, awful, you know, complicated political reasons, awfulness. It was avoided by a lot of people this year.
I didn't bother this year.
No, I didn't. But when it's at its best, it is an insanity that takes over everyone for a day, and the next day it disappears without trace.
You know, I've got a theory about Eurovision when it hit its peak and now it's dying.
Oh, you think Eurovision's dying?
Yeah.
Go on. Is this your TV producer knowledge?
Yeah, I think it hit its peak. A bit like when Nadia was in Bake Off. That was the peak of Bake Off, and then it went downhill from there.
Yeah.
When Melgi Droitsch was the milkmaid, that was the peak of Eurovision. It can't do any better, so therefore we begin the gradual slide into obscurity.
I see Mel quite a lot at Magic Radio, because she's got a show on Magic Radio, and every time I talk to her, all I can see is that.
Yeah. Was the best thing
is her
that's
yanking
ever happened
on those udders. Do you know what? I've suddenly got the urge to go and watch that video because it's the way she's keeping eye contact.
Yeah. It's sexy. It's weirdly sexy. And 50 Shades has got nothing on Melgi Droitsch.
Why isn't there a 50 Shades milking spin-off?
Fanfic. I'm going to write it.
Oh my God, I love it. It's the hybrid you never knew that you wanted. Rachel, I think that's hilarious. Thank you very much indeed for that. Right, very quickly before we finish, the final thing, How to Poo on a Date. This was a very interesting book. How to Poo at Work was the original toilet etiquette guide. I didn't know there was this is a sequel. How to Poo at Work. It sounds quite easy. Goes on to say it made a big splash in the UK.
That's excellent.
Now toilet etiquette spurts Matt and Enzo have turned their attention and extensive experience to what is surely one of the most important questions that has played on the mind of mankind for centuries: how to poo on a date. Now obviously you and I have not been on a date for a while. Obviously we go on dates, but you know, we haven't been on a pressure date, because now we're in a situation where I could happily say, sorry, I'm off for a dump. I'll see you in 15. But the worry which I've had is when you sometimes I go for a wee and I might be longer or I might be queuing for a wee. You know what I mean? It might get a bit of a panic wee situation. I can't wait. And then I start to think, oh God, I've been so long, people think I'm having a poo.
I still don't. I think you and Abby got it right first time. I don't really see what the issue is. You're in a bar, go to the loo, have a poo.
Because you've been too long.
It's, so there it's, was
the a queue. It's the embarrassment.
There was a queue for the loo. Yeah, not it was not a poo.
Okay, fine.
I can only do.
We always
it's
like
more of a logbook, isn't it?
Oh, that's it. That's it. Nothing else needs to be said this week. We're not. Nothing's getting better than that. I'm closing all browsers are being closed down. Thank you very much to the emails we had from our lovely listeners earlier on. Keep those coming, please. Tom@toastpod.com. Any issues, any questions, and the poll, of course, the poi, which you can do on Spotify. Give us a rating and a review as well, please, because that always helps. Next week, Owain Wynne-Evans, off of the drums, off of Early Mornings on Radio 2. He will be my guest. He's got some fantastic stuff. Beth, you're going to love that episode.
Great.
I warn you now, it's going to be very good. All right, thanks everyone. See you soon. Bye. Say goodbye.
Bye. It's my mid-morning talk.